We are days away from a snap summit that's between President Trump and Russian President Vladimir Putin.
The two leaders will meet in Alaska on Friday as Trump seeks to negotiate an end to the war in Ukraine.
All right, here to talk about what to expect, we're joined now by NPR's Charles Maynes in Moscow. Charles, things are moving really fast, so slow it down for us and catch us up to speed.
Yeah, sure. You know, normally summits take months to plan. This one's being thrown together in a week, so everyone really is scrambling to figure out details. One key aspect is that it appears Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky will not be included. President Putin of Russia has said he's not ready for that, and in any case, clearly prefers the Cold War era optics of a one-on-one with Trump. Yet Vice President J.D. Vance on Sunday suggested that a Putin-Trump-Zelensky meeting was only a matter of time, as he explained to Fox News.
We're now trying to figure out, frankly, scheduling and things like that around when these three leaders could sit down and discuss an end to this conflict.
So meanwhile, European leaders gathered over the weekend to coordinate their response. What did they say?
Yeah, they issued a statement rejecting any attempt by Trump and Putin to cut a deal that would force concessions on Ukraine, essentially joining Zelensky and saying, you can't decide this without us. And yet this summit is going forward. It would be Putin's first visit with an American president since 2021, before his full-scale invasion of Ukraine, and his first visit to the U.S. barring sessions at the United Nations since way back in 2007.
Yeah, and just last week, Trump was threatening sanctions. Now he's kind of thrown together a summit. So what changed?
Well, you know, that sanctions threat may have played a role. Clearly, though, Trump wants to end this war and burnish his credentials as a global peacemaker. Now, the problem really has been that despite leveraging his personal relationship with Putin, it hasn't worked. Putin kept rejecting Trump's off calls for a ceasefire, convinced his military had the upper hand. So now Trump is really taking a different approach. He's trying to cut a deal before an agreed-upon ceasefire, focusing on concessions that might lead to peace. But of course, we don't know what promises were made. These initial negotiations happened behind closed doors when Trump's envoy, Steve Witkoff, met with Putin in the Kremlin last week.
And Trump talked about some lands being swapped as part of a peace deal. What do we know about what that might involve?
Well, there seems to be some confusion over the Witkoff-Putin meeting. There are a host of reports claiming Witkoff may have misinterpreted or been given a false impression of larger Russian concessions. I spoke with a former Putin spokesman, Sergei Markov, who argued grand gestures were unlikely from his former boss, but Putin would be looking for ways to keep Trump happy and on the hook.
I think it's some kind of possibility of Putin to give small gift to Donald Trump to keep Donald Trump in the peace process.
Though again, we don't know what that gift, if we borrow Mr. Markov's words, might look like.
One more thing, Charles. Alaska. Why Alaska?
Well, you know, Alaskans might say, why not Alaska? It's a beautiful place, though there are mixed feelings about the summit taking place there because there's a complicated history. You know, Alaska was part of the Russian Empire, sold to the U.S. in 1867 for a song. And the irony is that Russian nationalists to this day argue Alaska should be returned to Russia. And it's Russia's focus on empire and the past that in many ways led us to the conflict we see in Ukraine today.
That's NPR's Charles Maynes in Moscow. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Israel's Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu made his case to the international press last night about why Israel is moving to take control of the rest of the Gaza Strip.
And he directly pushed back against mounting criticism both at home and internationally over this military escalation.
This is the best way to end the war and the best way to end it speedily.
With us is NPR's Emily Fang in Tel Aviv following all of this. So, Emily, how did Netanyahu describe Israel's expansion of the war in Gaza?
So he detailed some already announced plans to take over Gaza City, which is in the north of Gaza, in refugee camps in central Gaza. And he said civilians would be moved from these places to what he called designated safe zones. But it's really unclear what that means, given this would involve hundreds of thousands of civilians being evacuated. And nearly all of Gaza is basically a combat zone or it is a militarized zone. Netanyahu said Israel had no choice but to finish the job of defeating Hamas. But hundreds of former senior defense officials said last week in an open letter Israel had already achieved all of its military objectives in Gaza. Netanyahu then spent a good part of the last half of the press conference calling reports of mass starvation in Gaza part of a, quote, global campaign of lies. Even though NPR and many other news outlets and aid organizations through firsthand reporting have documented systemic hunger due to Israel's restrictions on letting in more aid to Gaza. And yesterday, I went down to Israel's border with Gaza. It was close enough that I could see the destroyed northern edge of the strip, you know, concrete ruins of houses, completely empty of people. And you could see the smoke and hear the bombs from ongoing Israeli bombing of this enclave. And that bombing later escalated throughout the day, including a targeted airstrike last night that killed Anas al-Sharif, Gaza's most prominent television journalist, and also a number of his Al Jazeera colleagues.
You mentioned how Netanyahu says that Israel has no choice but to fight now. Do Israelis also say this? Do they support this?
They are extremely split. A good portion of society, including, as I mentioned, many former military officials, want the war to end. And there are growing anti-war protests and calls this week for a mass strike. Yesterday, I also followed a group of several hundred mothers and at least one former chief of staff to the military who also drove down to the border of Gaza in protest of the war. And one of the demonstrators was Agamit Gelb. She is the mother of a soldier currently fighting for the Israeli army. And her second son, she says, is about to be drafted in a week.
It only gives more and more soldiers there. They are very, very tired of this war. We see the impact of the war on our sons already.
People like her worry their sons are dying for no real military gains in Gaza, and Gelb's concern really gets to the political tension that's emerging over the aims of this war.
In what way?
So Netanyahu has maintained the purpose of Israel's war in Gaza is to destroy Hamas and free hostages. About 20 are still believed to be alive there, goals that he reiterated on a call with President Trump yesterday. But Netanyahu is politically reliant on these two far-right ministers who have far bigger plans for Gaza. They have explicitly and repeatedly said Gaza should be destroyed, that Palestinians living there removed to another country, and Jewish people should be allowed to move in again. This has become a central point of concern among soldiers I've been interviewing over the last week who are increasingly refusing to serve in the military because they want to get the hostages out, but they see what these two ministers proposing as a religious war that they tell me they want no part of.
That's NPR's Emily Fang in Tel Aviv. Emily, thank you.
Thanks, A.
Scores of federal agents fanned out across Washington, D.C. on Sunday.
The deployment came after President Trump promised a swift crackdown on crime and homelessness. Trump says he'll unveil more plans for improving public safety and, quote, beautifying, unquote, the nation's capital at a press conference later this morning.
NPR's Brian Mann was on the streets last night watching how all of this played out. Brian, so what's the president saying about the Capitol?
Well, really, he's painting a portrait of Washington as a city that's under siege by criminals, writing on his social media platform. Trump said, and I'm quoting here, before the tents, squalor, filth, and crime, it was the most beautiful capital in the world. It will soon be that again. He's promising to push out people who don't have housing, and he said criminals will also be swept off the street into jails.
Yeah, he's comparing the speed and power of this crackdown to what's been happening on the U.S.-Mexico border. So what did you see, Brian?
You know, nothing very dramatic, at least so far. I did see dozens of agents from the FBI, DEA, Homeland Security, and other agencies walking the streets. Some wore masks. I saw one carrying a military-style rifle. But the fact is, crime is down in Washington. Violent crime hit a 30-year low last year. That's according to the U.S. Justice Department. So there were tourists and locals out on a normal summer evening eating ice cream and street food. People I talked to, seemed confused by the presence of so much federal law enforcement. And speaking yesterday on MSNBC, Washington, D.C.'s Mayor Muriel Bowser also questioned the president's motives for putting these federal agents on the streets.
Now, if the priority is to show force in an American city, we know he can do that here. But it won't be because there's a spike in crime.
At one point last night, there was a minor car accident, a fender bender, and I saw at least two dozen federal agents come running to a scene where the D.C. Metro Police seemed to have things pretty much under control.
Wow. Now, you also visited one of the homeless camps that President Trump wants removed. What did you see in here?
Well, people are scared and they're angry. Greg Evans is 39 years old. He struggled for years with addiction and other health problems.
I'm definitely afraid that he could do whatever he wants to do, but I can't live my life in fear.
And I also spoke with George Morgan. He's 65 years old. And he told me the U.S. is a wealthy country and should do more to help people who don't have housing and health care.
As much as God has blessed America, and we're constantly begging God to bless America, truth be told, we're in a shamble and in hot water as far as taking care of our own.
Now, so far, Trump hasn't said where he wants people like Evans and Morgan to go. Writing on social media, he said, and again, I'm quoting here, "The homeless have to move out immediately. We will give you places to stay, but far from the Capitol."
All right. Now, the president is expected to speak more about this at a press conference today. Any idea, Brian, what might be coming next?
Well, it's interesting. I want to be clear again. According to city officials and the DOJ, crime is down in Washington, as it is in most American cities. But Trump has suggested the situation in Washington is so bad, he may have to take over the Metropolitan Police or the entire city government. He's floated the idea of putting National Guard on the street. Trump says he plans to fix Washington the way he fixed the border.
All right, that's NPR's Brian Mann in Washington, D.C. Brian, thanks.
Thanks, hey.